Chapter 29. With Punjo using the portal generator to create a series of portal bridges, Pike and Akreen and the entire crew were able to leapfrog from the tower balcony to the Scarabus's dockside berth in a matter of minutes. Some moments later, Sam Brock arrived in a double-rotor two-seater flyer steered by one of the Maljanori. The small craft was little more than a functional chassis with bolted-on seats and a safety cage that looked like an afterthought. Pike grinned widely as the lieutenant clambered unsteadily out, clearly relieved to be back on a solid surface.
"Nothing like a bracing dash through the air while strapped to a rustic egg-beater, eh?"
"Brings a whole new meaning to the words hair-raising," she said, standing back as the flyer pilot took off with a clattering buzz and headed back to the tower. Brock faced Akreen and gave a snappy salute.
"First blade Akreen, I am Lieutenant Brock, Earthsphere Naval Intelligence. I look forward to helping you bring this situation to a satisfactory conclusion."
"Thank you, Lieutenant," said the Zavri. "I am seeking the death of the last gunlord and vengeance for my people. I gladly accept your aid in such a task."
"Don't worry, Akreen, me old sweat," said Pike. "Once we rescue Dervla, you can have all the death and vengeance you want. Now, the good lieutenant will take you aboard, show you the bridge and all that, while I give out some orders here."
Brock frowned darkly at him, then shrugged and went to usher Akreen up the ramp to the main hold. Pike watched them go, then turned to face his crew, but it was Kref who beat him to the punch, seeming to read Pike's intentions on his face.
"Are you making us stay behind, Captain?"
"Not fair, Chief! Not fair!" said Ansel. "You're letting the Lady Lieutenant go along!"
"Letting? She told me she was going, and besides, she does happen to be a trained combat officer."
"All right, stronger than Kref, more explosives cunning than me, I don't think so." "No, you're staying here and that's final, get me?"
Pike's anger surged to the surface, almost boiling over. This on-the-fly plan to slam the Scarabus into the sun was deranged, beyond demented, the sort of plan that only a crazed metal man and an Earthsphere officer berserk enough to take on the war cage with only a robot for company could dream up. In truth, they had run out of options, but this time he could not in all conscience bring the crew with him, not when the chances of survival were slender at best. He could imagine the choice curses Dervla would rain down on his head if he told her he had asked the crew to fly into the pestilential sun to win someone else's war. Breathing in deep, he reached for composure.
"Look, me boys, this is the maddest stunt I've ever got myself mixed up in, and I have to take a swing at it, otherwise things could get really crazy ugly. But this time, I want you daft gougers safe and out of it. Am I clear now? This is an order."
Ansel shook his head in disbelief.
"How am I ever going to find Wynn?"
"I'll get the truth, Anse. Even if I have to cut it out of that evil biomech with a blunt knife. Now, are we settled? Or do I have to wrestle each and every one of you over it?"
There were resentful looks, followed by sorrowful nods. "Good," Pike thought. "Better for you to be alive and resenting me than burnt to a crisp." Then Ansel brightened.
"Well, if we can't come along, we could steal that Shuskar ship for you, Chief. What do you think?"
Pike glanced down at the huge, ungainly vessel.
"Bound to be guards on board," he said.
Ansel shrugged.
"Never stole a ship that big before. Could be fun."
"Ah! Just be careful about it, you mad skaggers," Pike said, raising his hand in farewell before climbing the ramp up into the Scarabus's main hold.
"Welcome aboard, Captain," said the ship AI. "Are the other crew members accompanying us?"
"Nope, they're sitting it out for this jaunt, so we'll have to manage by ourselves," Pike said. "You can button her up tight and prep for departure, and ask the lieutenant and our Zavri guest to meet me in engineering."
Will do, Captain.
The hum of servoed hydraulics closing the cargo bay door thrummed in the air as Pike took the small lifter platform up to the catwalk level. The ship was quiet in its own way, providing that background murmur made up from innumerable systems and vents and pumps and the occasional leakage of audio code as systems talk to one another. Pike found it soothing, oddly restful. This was a bit how the Scarabus felt after they'd just completed a mission and got paid, when the crew were usually out on the town or orbital station heading for party-wired oblivion. Except that there was also an underlying tension, making it feel like the lull before entering the arena. Brock and Akreen were arriving from a lower-level companionway by the time Pike reached engineering. "What are we doing here?" said Brock.
"We are here, Lieutenant, because this is the only other place on the ship with safety couches as good as the ones on the bridge."
He let that sink in for a moment.
"Just a precaution."
Engineering's control and monitor stations were crammed into a narrow but tall compartment that stretched over two decks. Pike sent Brock down the spiral leaf steps to the station at the bottom, directed Akreen to the one in the middle, and gave him a swift lesson in fastening and releasing the restraints, then settled into his own couch at the top, replacing his chainer headset with the one attached to the headrest.
"Scar, how are we doing this fine weather?"
he said as the couch shifted forward, positioning him correctly before the control station.
"All systems optimal, Captain. Ready to leave."
"Fire him up and take us out, then."
He smiled as he felt, or imagined he felt, the strengthening vibrancy of the ship's drives as they began to deploy their pent-up power. The main triple-screen display before him showed a range of onboard system readouts, as well as a tiled selection of video feeds from the hull cams and open feeds from the Shadow Bastion. One was a sound and vision contact request from the control centre at the tower top, and, after Pike okayed it, he found himself face-to-face with Gabrozen Mav.
"Captain, it is gratifying to see that you are well. Oh, along with Lieutenant Brock and your unexpected associate."
Mav scowled.
"The lieutenant mentioned only that she had vital matters to discuss with you before she dashed off. But now it appears that the both of you are leaving us, and in the company of a warrior of the Zavri, whose unswerving loyalty to the Shuskar forces me to question your motives."
Akreen intervened.
"I am Akreen, first blade of the Zavri, and I have learned cold and terrible truths in recent days. The last of the Gunlords has seized the Sunheart and all its destructive powers. We shall pursue it there and kill it, if we survive the Sundive."
"Which we shall, of course, without a doubt," Pike said. "Easy as falling off a log."
"Yeah, into a really big furnace."
Gabrozen Mav looked contrite.
"I see. And now I can see that even the unheard-of instance of a Zavri leader turning against the Shuskar should not be discounted in these days. My apologies for distrusting you, although if only you had shared this plan, which I'm sure you have thought through in exhaustive detail. Well, in the spirit of cooperation, I believe you should know that some security monitors up here are showing Kor and a handful of his marauders heading towards the ship berths. But, since you're about to depart, I shall pass this on to our patrols."
"Sounds like a good plan, Mav," said Pike with a wink. "And see if those Shuskar left any interesting bottles lying around. I'm going to need a mighty stiff drink when we get back."
"I shall send out a search party immediately," said the chainer leader. "May the battle spirits guide you all to victory."
"I know what kind of battle spirits I could do with right now," he thought, as Gabrozen Mav cut the link.
"Scar, are we clear of that atmosphere containment yet?"
field transition almost complete, Captain.
Good. Lieutenant, I do hope you brought those sun-hot coordinates, as you promised. I've just jacked in a data pin with the location. Your ship pronounced them flawless.
That is nice, he said sardonically.
Scar, are all the force field emitters properly tasked and aligned? And will they keep us alive in the flames of hell?
They are, Captain. And I have reanalyzed the force field configuration sequence and rerun the virtual tests under the most stringent of conditions.
And?
The solar irradiation flow exerts a certain abrasion effect on shields like ours, said the AI. The power drain will push our generators to their tolerances, but my tests indicate high survival probabilities. We are fortunate that you had those upgrades installed recently.
For a moment, Pike wanted to ask exactly what the probabilities were, then decided to let it pass. Okay, and now that we're leaving the frying pan, how long till we reach the fire?
ETA, at high cruise, will be 9.8 minutes, Captain.
Don't want to pop your party balloons, said Brock, but I'm getting messages from the Citadel world about that Shuskar flagship.
Sure enough, the visual sensors showed it emerging from the field that's sealed in the canyon dock's atmosphere. A vessel of brute, blockish lines, which then turned its blunt prow in the Scarabus's direction.
Pike watched this with a mixture of aggravation and dread, and a modicum of relief. At least Ansel and the rest were safe. No way they could have got on board if it was already departing. Scar, that thing's an aging junk heap. Surely we can outrun it, or bloody its nose with a spread of missiles.
We can outrun them over short distances, Captain. But the flagship's drives, for all their rudimentary design, still have more muscle and would catch us over the medium stretch. But there is a more immediate problem. Realigning the force field emitters has left the ship with minimal stern shielding, which makes us vulnerable.
Incoming message from the flagship, Captain, said Brock. Of course there is, Pike said acidly. Let's see it. His main display blinked, and there was Kor leering out at him. Pike groaned. Frackin' hairy hell! You just can't leave me alone, can you?
We are joined by Fate, Pike,
Kor said in a weirdly insistent manner.
Our paths have crossed and recrossed. Each of us has dodged the hammer blows that flew to and fro amid our tenacious affrays. And now strands of destiny have drawn you and I together in this place.
Sorry, wait a second, what was that?
Pike cupped a hand to his ear. Did I just hear a reeking load of pseudo-mystic bullskag? Why, yes, I do believe that I did.
On the screen, a furious Kor slammed his fist on the control panel and jabbed a big finger at Pike.
I'm going to rip the guts out of that flying trash can and blast your hull into a smoking, torn and leaking basket.
He turned to someone out of sight and said,
Target their engines! Target their stern! Hit them with everything!
Watching, Pike heard a faint thud, saw the picture of Kor waver slightly, then heard alarm sounding. Kor turned and said,
What was that?
The answer was mostly inaudible, but Pike could just make out,
Primary weapons generator!
He grinned.
That's a crying shame, so it is, Pike said down the channel. And there's you, all ready to do your badass desperado from hell routine as well.
But Kor wasn't listening as he stood and went elsewhere on his bridge to argue with someone.
What is all this about? Said Brock, who was seeing everything on her display too.
Not got a clue, Lieutenant, but so far they have not managed to get off a single shot.
Kor reappeared, ordering someone to target the Scarabus with upper hull beam cannon batteries, and, almost immediately, the lights on his bridge failed, as did the artificial gravity.
This seems a bit...
Pike started to say, stopping when he heard someone on the flickering bridge shout something about,
"Intruders on deck 8! No, deck 5!
And,
"My reports indicate deck 3, sir!"
Then Pike shook his head and guffawed out loud.
"It's Ansel and Cref and the others. Has to be."
"Panic over," he said. "Khor has his hands full. Let's get back to focusing on the next hair-raising, death-defying escapade."
"Panic over?" Brock said. "Are you sure?" Before Pike could answer, the visual link to the Shuskar ship went out in a brief burst of interference.
"Trust me," said Pike. "We'll have no more lying flannel from that quarter."
"Actually," she said a moment later, "they're veering off course and piling on the velocity, and heading straight for the sun." On his display, a small pane popped up, showing the Shuskar ship at high magnitude, its main thruster burning a bright blue.
"Aye, it's quite popular this season. Scar, what's our ETA now?"
"ETA for insertion launch point, 6.4 minutes.
Second by second, the time dragged by. At 3.5 minutes, Brock told them that two life pods had launched from the Shuskar flagship, and at 2.1 minutes, she announced that it was burning up in the sun's corona.
"Bye-bye, Khor," Pike murmured. "So much for the strands of destiny, eh?"
"Your confidence in the face of adversarial threat is most commendable, Captain," said Akreen. "Does it extend to the next stage of our journey?"
Pike didn't have the heart to pass on his conviction that his own crew had used the portal generator to board and then sabotage the flagship, so instead he served up a platter of reassurances and a side order of tech specs and spanner speak. Akreen listened politely, and once he'd finished said,
"I understand, Captain. Great rewards demand great risk."
Pike's smile was rueful.
Now there's a leader who knows what it's all about.
Then, almost like a surprise, the ship AI announced that they had reached the launch point and that the sun dive had now commenced. Pike inhaled deeply, blew it out through pursed lips. The deep background vibrations of the drive altered pitch very slightly, signalling a ramping up of velocity. The war cage's sun loomed large now, its vast curvature of fusion-driven brilliance scaled down to a dirty, mottled orange by the monitor systems. No one spoke, perhaps out of reluctance to shatter this strange silence, the kind of tense and austere hush that living beings shared when faced with the possibility of utter obliteration. The ship's force fields snapped into their customized configuration before the heat of the sun had a chance to start raising the hull temperature. The velocity was still increasing as the Scarabus plunged through the swirling tendrils and curtains of the outer corona. At once, the temperature at the leading edge of the force field began to spike. This was where the inner force field layers came into play, their braided energy sheaths shifting in rapid patterns designed to channel and divert torrents of deadly radiation around and away from the ship. Such shield operations required a huge and continuous power supply, which was why, apart from engineering, the rest of the ship was dark, airless, and without artificial gravity. Pike tried not to think about that, preferring instead to imagine the shock on the faces of the gun lord's goons when the Scarabus swept in, guns blazing. At least, that was his plan. According to the data brought on board by Lieutenant Brock, the Sunheart had an entry harbour of some kind for visiting ships, which should open for them since the Scarabus still had the authority beacon mounted. He was about to see if the sensors were picking up anything when he heard a far-off, muffled thud, felt a tremor pass through the compartment, and saw red alerts flashing on his displays.
"What's going on?" said Brock. "Are we okay?"
"Secondary generator just blew," Pike said.
"Don't worry. We still have enough juice to finish the trip."
except that now we have to run the primary generator past its tolerances and shrink the overall force field envelope, he thought, as the ship AI put these contingencies into operation. But if the power balance deteriorates any further, I might start losing bits of the ship. A minute later, 60 long, agonizing seconds, the navigationals reported picking a guide signal on the beacon's frequency. The ship AI steered them along the projected path, and suddenly the ship was flying down a huge fissure emptied of the sun's superheated plasma. The titanic strain on the primary generator eased, and on Pike's screen, several readouts began slowly falling out of the red zone. He breathed a long sigh of relief, ending in a cough. "So, we are alive," said Brock over the comm, sounding slightly amazed. "Not baked, singed, charred, or even lightly toasted," Pike said. "But alive and ready to put the boot right into any filthy Shuskar vermin stupid enough to get in our way." "Well, who knows?" she said. "You may get your wish." "The truth is cold," said Akreen, "but vengeance is hot." "And right now," Pike said, "we are so very, very hot." For a moment or two, no one said anything, and Pike felt as if he were coming down from the high of having dodged death yet again. On his screen, a video feed from a hull cam, possibly the only one still functioning, showed what the guide signal was leading the Scarabus towards. The Sunheart's Harbour was a vast open space with amber to orange pulsing walls that reached up and up. Successive levels hung above the harbour in a steep incline. Mostly strange open floors, some occupied by building complexes, others filled with landscaped gardens or pools and waterfalls. The Scarabus was swooping down towards one end of a huge crescent of docks and berths. Pike kept a nervous eye on the hull strain indicators and the output readings for the primary generator as the ship continued smoothly along the path towards one of the smaller berths. The hull cam panned to reveal the full sweeping curve of docking recesses, and some were gargantuan.
"Rensic uncovered some old documents about the Sunheart," said Brock. "It says the Builder's Hall of Command is at the very apex of this magnificent edifice. Riser tube sedans provide a relaxed ascent past a series of architectural marvels, or visitors can avail themselves of autocraft that will transport them effortlessly to the Sunheart's paramount level, where everyday crucial decisions are..."
"What the hell is that?" Pike said.
"A translation Rensic did for me," said Brock.
"Sounds like a tourist brochure."
"You know what?"
Pike said, keying in a series of commands to stop the navigationals following guide data issued by the Sunheart docks.
"I didn't come all this way to be fobbed with some lame sightseer saunter. We're here to end this. So no more shilly-shallying. It's time we kicked in the front door. Scar, full power to the thrusters and get us to the skaggin top of this thing."
From a lost corner of her memories, Dervla recalled some ancient pre-space song about being down so very long that everything starts to look like up. And during the drawn-out, seemingly endless captivity within her own skull, her own body, she had eventually reached a nadir of such hopeless, lifeless blackness that she thought it would consume her down to the core, that she would eventually cease to exist. But she was not consumed. She was not obliterated. And existence continued. And purely by the fact that she had endured and survived, she knew that she was stronger than her own despair, even though she had been without any kind of hope. And with that knowledge came an understanding of her captor, Ex-Rahald, the realization and recognition of the all-devouring fear of death exacerbated by the loss of its four broodmates, which was the real driver of its lust for control, its abiding hate for anything that might constitute a threat.
"I see you," Dervla thought. Right at that moment, the biomech was conducting a small conference with several planetary Shuskar governors, speaking with her mouth, gesturing with her hand, and she thought, "Oh, how I see you. See the terror that crawls beneath the surface, buried deep and hidden well. But I see." When the time came, she would hold up the mirror of its fears and shove them down its parasitic throat. And that was the moment when a massive splintering crash thundered and reverberated around the huge open auditorium. The Gunlord Exra Huld paused in mid-sentence and turned to look. A ship had flown all the way up to the Paramount Tier and crashed through the encircling glass barriers. Shattered glass rained down as the ship halted to perch on the wide topmost bank of seating, with some of its landing gear extended and a couple of the auditorium's long, narrow banners draped across its hull. Exra Huld's fury was blistering as he ordered all the auditorium guards to attack and open fire on the intruder vessel. And Dervla, staring through her own eyes, could scarcely believe that she was looking at the Scarabus. And if she'd had control of her own mouth, she would have gleefully yelled, "Kill them, Pike! Kill them all!" Akreen's opinion of the human male Pike was a variable thing. Sometimes the human's lack of respect and scant regard for status and the chain of command was so pronounced that the First Blade considered trying to put himself in charge. At other times, Pike's impulsive resort to extravagant imprecations reminded Akreen of the few Valzanians he had encountered away from the battlefields, veterans in cursing each and every one. Then Akreen would observe how Pike cajoled and persuaded his colleagues to follow a particular course of action, including his crew, who were permitted latitudes of descent that would have been unacceptable in a Zavri battalion. But when Pike ordered his ship to fly straight to the apex of the Sunheart's elaborately stratified structure, what Akreen felt was a surge of exhilaration. All that he could perceive about the situation came from the display screens before him. The ship system readouts were incomprehensible, but the video feed from the hull cam as the ship flew vertically was compelling. The immense tiers and structures became a bizarre topography across which the Scarabus hurtled. Akreen's physiology, as always, was sensitive to the electrical flows of his surroundings, such that he had dampened it ever since stepping aboard Pike's vessel. Now he was extending that sensitivity again, preparing himself for the struggle that lay ahead.
"This is it!" Pike yelled from above. "Hold on to your hats!"
For a moment, Akreen wondered why he didn't have a hat to hold on to. Then, on the screen, the shiny reflective surface that the Scarabus was passing over suddenly swung up to become an obstacle that the ship smashed its way through. Amid a cascade of splintering panes, falling and shattering on the ship's hull, Pike steered them into a huge U-shaped auditorium, using the suspensors to halt and settle onto a wide, curving bank of seats, extending some landing legs to keep the ship level. Pike and the female Brock were arguing over who should be first out, even as the first sounds and flashes of small arms fire became evident. Akreen decided to exert some First Blade authority, although with sufficient human-like courtesy to avoid what the lieutenant once referred to as rubbing someone up the wrong way.
"Honoured Captain, honoured Lieutenant," he began, "I feel I must remind you both that you are visitors to the War Cage, and that the great crimes committed against my people naturally requires that the first to stride forth and smite the Gunlord's butchers should be one who is War Cage born. While I keep these, scumbags busy, the both of you will be equipping yourself for the battle ahead."
"Now that, Akreen, is a plan," said Pike.
By now, all three had clambered out of their couches, which were returning to their recesses.
I'll get the ship to open the main bay door, and you can go out and play slap me in the head with them gougers. But just so long as we're clear, you're just dealing with the nearby goons, not dashing off on some mad attack. I know how cranky old Caldro Vryn can get sometimes.
Yes, that is exactly what I shall be doing, Captain, Akreen lied. Staying near the ship. Eliminating goons.
Pike declared himself satisfied, so while he and Brock hurried off to the armory, Akreen quickly made his way to the main hold, crossed its empty floor, and descended the ramp. He was immediately targeted by a crossfire of energy bolts coming from two assailants, one firing from behind the next lower tier of seats, the other using a wide decorative pillar for cover. The first he buried under a heap of seats ripped up from nearby rows, and the second he surprised with a vaulting charge across the seating that ended with a shove to the big pillar. The unsuspecting Shuskar was crushed by the impact, even as he attempted to retreat. Akreen then paused to survey the auditorium. The grand sweep of seating was orientated towards a resplendent stage, which also had recessed rows of plusher seating, undoubtedly for visitors of importance. And upon that stage was another stage, the highest dais, where an imposing array of flickering display screens spread out to either side like wings, while a solitary figure stood below, busy with glowing control panels. In his head, Akreen could hear the voice of Caldro Vryn, repeating with an inexorable anger, "Near, near, near," and almost feel the shards of the Incarnalith stirring within his flesh, hungry for vengeance. He began to run down one aisle, vaulting across seat rows from raised back to raised back with balletic precision, ignoring the Shuskar guards firing. Any who got in his way were dealt with savagely, their weapons and armour ripped away, their necks broken. Then, all of a sudden, he was mounting a broad rack of steps to the wider, lower stage, and the dais came into view, along with the vile Exrahald, in its latest stolen host, the human female who was part of Pike's crew.
"Before coming here, I had not anticipated that we would meet again so soon, you and I."
The gun lord's amplified voice, coming from the woman's mouth, sounded full and rich as it echoed across the auditorium.
"But then, you and I have both experienced life-altering events, have we not? Some subversive modification of your perceptions is making me seem like your enemy, but I am not, I swear it. Come up to the command center with peaceful intent, and I can help dispel these illusions."
"Near," said Caldro Vryn.
"Vengeance," said Caldro Vryn,
hammering in his head over and over so loudly that his precursors could hardly make themselves heard.
"Do not hesitate," said Gredaz. "Strike with full force. Disable the gun arm, then go for the head." "No, regard this abomination with extreme caution," said Zivalin. "Treat it as if it can see into your head." "I am your end, Exrahald," he bellowed. "I bring you the cold truth of death."
"Come then, destruction awaits."
Akreen charged across the grand stage. Three guards closed in to stop him, and he disposed of all of them with ease, snatching the leading one off his feet, then using him to batter the other two to the floor. Three swift blows laid them out cold.
"Near, near, near,"
cried the iron voice of Caldro Vryn, and Akreen found himself muttering it too, as he dived towards the nearest steps and rushed up to the command dais. Gunlord Exrahald was cowering in a gap between two banks of instruments and readouts, pleading for mercy, begging for its life. Akreen took no notice of these entreaties, or of the thread of suspicion which nagged at him. Instead, he stood over the quailing, flinching figure as the shards of the Incarnalith stirred within. Pain exploded in his side. A Kreen turned to see one of the gun lord's pale thralls holding a long, heavy weapon, from which a wavering stream of energy was pouring. He recognized it immediately as one of the anti-Zavri weapons that the Shuskar had developed under the gun lord's direction. Fiery coldness crawled all over his skin, sinking into his biometallic flesh. Despite the razoring torment, he took a step towards the thrall and felt a second spear of energy strike him in the back. The surge of unfolding from the Incarnalith shards went out like a doused fire. The cries of Greedaz and Zivalin were as forlorn as winged creatures in the grip of a hurricane. And the territory of his own body, his very own physical heartland, turned dark and numb and cold. He toppled, falling to lie on his side, but other hands tipped him over onto his back. The energy flow from the weapons continued as the grinning gun lord stood over him, its good hand holding a gleaming fist-sized object.
I could have you killed, Kreen, but you are still too valuable to dispense with just yet, or rather the Zavri are. In the meantime, let us keep you inert and mischief-free, shall we?
The object he held suddenly sprouted a ring of spikes, and he slammed it into a Kreen's chest. The thralls stopped firing their weapons, but the numbing web of energy still played about him, clouding all senses but sight. They had made him into a statue and rendered him harmless. He was defeated. Observing the clash from a shadowy corner deep in the auditorium's underpinning webwork of girders, Renzik was surprised by this turn of events.
I must admit, I did not expect to see the first blade get chumped so easily, he said. The beam weapons wielded by the gun lord's mutant slaves seem to have rendered him immobile, said Renzik 2.0. Yes, then the application of that device to the Zavri's chest, it could be a field lock of some kind. Didn't hear what Exra Hull said just then. He was out of range of the control board pickups. Second wave is on its way, Renzik 2.0 said.
Renzik 1.0 switched his monitoring to vid feeds covering the rest of the auditorium, and, sure enough, two figures were heading straight for the big stage. Pike and Brock were handling attacks by the remaining Shuskar guards with considerable skill, but Renzik knew that they wouldn't stand a chance against the biomech parasite and its mutant thralls.
Is there anything we can do? Said Renzik 2.0. I am assuming that we view the biomech as a possible threat to construct interests.
Correct, said Renzik 1.0.
Disruption to its data and communication lines is an option, but nearly all the important nodes are shelled in triple redundant networks. We could use our onboard nanofabricators to produce neurotoxins, but they would only be effective against the thralls. And, in any case, we have no delivery systems. It appears that a drastic solution might be called for. I agree. Although, due to my own contingency preparations, I now have a limited combat capacity.
Renzik 2.0 transmitted a data burst to Renzik 1.0, who was gratified to see what the small drone had achieved with such few resources.
Very good. Nice detail. Cunning delivery system, it said. Thank you, said Renzik 2.0. Time is running out. In the event of abrogation, do you wish to upgrade me? I have grown used to a certain optimism, so it'll just be the transfer of the case files and the beta report. Then I can get down to configuring myself for battle.
During the moments when they weren't being fired upon, Pike sneaked backward looks at the Scarabus. He was trying to see if the sundive had caused any serious damage that would need repairing before they could fly back out.
Fly back out, he thought. Just the thought of going through that again.
A spread of energy bolts stitched burning holes in the seating close by, filling the air with the stink of charred plastics. Pike swore, ducked behind the row of seatbacks, and crawled quickly along a few places before poking his head up for a quick look. Another volley came his way, but he retreated to his previous position, readied the beamer pistol, held his breath, then popped up and raked the area where he had spotted the Shuskar guard. Something chimed, and he laughed, sitting back behind his cover.
"If that's that drone of yours telling me to keep my head down again."
"No, it's telling me something else."
"Where is the wee sod now?"
"Flying about in the heights," Brock said. "It's saying that the guards are actually pulling back, almost leaving us a clear run up at the stage." "Hmm. Could this by any chance be a trap, I wonder?"
"I reckon it's the trappiest trap you'll find outside one of those crazy dungeon mazes on Megan this floor. So what we could do is a stealth rush, hit them with a couple of nade waves, and then move in to mop up."
"Can we try not to risk killing a Kreen?" He frowned.
"Didn't see you as a fan of the big silver guy, but fine, flashbangs and empers, okay? Right, well, let's sneaky charge up on them and not get killed."
Moving in a half crouch, they flanked a main aisle that led straight towards the foot of the main stage, which appeared to be empty. And, sure enough, no sign of the Shuskar guards, which made the crawling sensation in the pit of his stomach crawl some more. As soon as they stepped onto the wide lower stage, beamer fire from the command dais scored smoking lines across the textured matting. Pike and Brock dived for cover, ending up in the recessed plush seats, which were provided with strange movable shelves and Spigot and Beaker cupolas. "I really have had a bellyful of this dodging death malarkey," Pike said, producing a handful of teardrop-shaped flashbangs from his jacket pocket. "Time to make the teeth rattle in their skulls." He lobbed them at the command dais, then turned away, shielding his eyes. There was a thunderous volley of loud bangs and a flickering burst of dazzling light, some of which still managed to leak through his fingers. When he looked up, Brock had her left eye closed as she waved her hand in front of her face.
"Right eye's a blur," she said,
as Pike helped her up out of the recess. "Wasn't expecting it to be that bright."
"It'll start to clear in less than a minute," Pike said. "Let's go check on our now-blind, evil mastermind, biomech pusbag."
Grenade smoke drifted over the command dais as they warily climbed the last few steps. Three or four pale-skinned humanoids were fumbling around blindly on hands and knees. A large, silvery form lay motionless over by one of the instrument boards, and sitting nearby was a familiar figure, that gross, swollen arm resting on her knees, leaning on her good hand, while her eyes stared bleakly, sightlessly out at nothing.
"Who's there?"
It was her voice, but with a tone of hardness winding through it. The warm timbre of Dervla was missing.
"Not one of your slaves," Pike said.
"Ah, the bold Captain Pike. So good of you and your companion to join us. I mean that in both senses of the word."
Pike grimaced.
"Ah, what a joker you are. We're here to kick your slimy ass and get you out of the body of my friend."
The parasite shrugged.
"Understandable, of course. Both of you have been the most resolute of adversaries, with yourself, Captain, taking the accolade for the sheer quantity of havoc and destruction that you have created in your wake. But you see, that is the sweetest part of victory, that moment where your enemy becomes your ally."
Pike stared at the creature that was wearing Dervla's body for a moment, then raised his beamer pistol, aiming carefully at the biomech weapon.
"Not today, you deluded Skagen bastard. Not today."
And for an instant, he heard a high-pitched whine. But before he could turn to look for the source of it, something unbearably sharp struck him in the side of the head. Searing agony blossomed out from it, engulfing his senses, and he caught Brock's choked-off cry of pain as the pistol fell from his enfeebled fingers. Then his legs went, and he sprawled on the floor.
"To go down in defeat to the Skorksra,
is no dishonor,
said the gunlord, now standing, eyesight clearly unaffected.
We triumph because we are skilled in all the ways of winning. You see, I launched the cytoblast darts from my subsidiary tract moments before you both set foot on the command platform. While we were having our pleasant discussion, I was steering them towards your undefended heads.
Say so, what? He managed to slur.
Cytoblast, a factory of genetics.
The gunlord squatted down next to Pike and patted his shoulder.
You or your allies slew my four siblings, so it is entirely fitting that you are compelled to make restitution. Our great store of experience provides us with insight into possible outcomes. Thus, we know how to prepare for them. And with your help, we shall rebuild our glorious empire. Yes, your help. That hot-burning sensation you can feel is the cytoblast sending the threads of an assembly mesh throughout your body in preparation for the first wave of gene engineering. Cellular modification on such a scale takes time, but the results are exquisite and immaculate.
What are you turning us into, you bag of slime? Was what he wanted to say, but all he could produce was a wordless gasp. Exrahald laughed and stroked his cheek.
Surely you have guessed. Yes, the cytoblasts are rebuilding you both into new score, Exra. Your minds will be wiped, then restocked from the shared memory RNA all of us have. And I will have two new siblings.
Right, Pike thought. That couldn't be any more horrific. From where he lay, Pike was within arm's reach of the frozen Akreen, whose eyes, he suddenly realized, were open and aware. While having a view from the floor of most of the immense array of monitor screens and of Exra Hull standing at the central control panel. After a moment, a cluster of the screens began to show scenes from a burning valley, smoke billowing from a wrecked city, the sides of mountains black with charred vegetation.
This is Armag, said Exra Hold. I had Armag City and its valley incinerated, but there are plenty of other towns and hamlets where rebellion festers like a poison.
The gunlord glanced round at him.
That makes it a primary target for my sun weapon. Oh, did you know about that? Yes, seems that the builders modified the corona convection regulator, turning it into a plasma mass launcher. But they never used it, even when faced with total defeat at the hands of that Shuskar-led insurgency. I, on the other hand, am quite happy to use any method that deals with threats to our supremacy. It is, after all, just one more way of winning.
The gunlord's head came up again, frowning, as if hearing something. There was a sudden intake of breath an instant before something vaguely oblong-shaped and glowing zoomed into view and struck Exra Hull high in the chest. The impact did not force him back, but he was suddenly enclosed in a web of quivering energy, which was having a deleterious effect on him. Groaning, he lurched away from the controls and fell to his knees, right at Akreen's feet. The gunlord's two remaining pale thralls moved to his aid, but they had barely taken a couple of steps when they stopped, swayed, and keeled over. Pike watched all this with a confused amazement, when he wasn't struggling to cope with the burning sensation threading through his semi-paralyzed body. Then, without warning, a small object, like a few gaming dice stuck together, came into view, trundling over the floor. A tinny voice spoke.
Captain Pike, Lieutenant Brock, I am Renzik 2.0. My progenitor, Renzik 1.0, is holding the Gunlord Exra Hold in a kind of stasis, but his substrate reserves will not last long. I calculate the odds of his survival to be no more than 1 in 655.
Here, Brock made a noise of protest, but it seemed, due to the pain of the cytoblast, that this was all she could manage. Renzik 2.0 continued,
I have already immobilized the remaining thralls, so that all that remains is for you to release the first blade Akreen from the suppressor field. With the natural Zavri strength and resolve, he would be able to kill the biomech outright.
Blinking away sweat, Pike regarded the tiny machine with something like intense aggravation.
Just how am I going to do that?
He said through disobedient lips, before Brock could respond. He didn't trust her to care about saving Dervla, not half as much as he cared.
There is a field-locking device attached to his chest. You must remove it. I am unable to do so, as the suppressor field would erase my core.
Not exactly perky and raring to go.
The pain from the cytoblast operations is considerable, but your limbs are still under your command.
Right. Is that all?
Renzik 1.0 cells will be depleted in only a few minutes, so you must act now.
With that, the tiny machine trundled out of sight. Pike lay on his side for a moment, steeling himself, then made his left arm stretched out to the floor while shifting his right arm to lever himself onto his elbows. Every movement felt as if ground glass was scraping in his joints. Every gasp became a groan. Every groan became an agonized cry, all interspersed with as pungent a selection of curses as he could manage given the situation. Brock looked to be having similar troubles, but he had a head start on her. And, as he dragged himself over to Akreen, a plan bloomed in his pain-drenched mind. Ignoring the cold prickling, he grabbed the Zavri's arm and pulled his heavy mass around towards where the gun lord knelt on the floor, so that the locking device on his silver chest was in easy reach. Thus prepared, Pike wiped sweat and grime from his face, then looked straight into those eyes, Dervla's eyes, filled with the raging hate of the parasite.
Here's the deal. You get your claws or tentacles or whatever out of Dervla. You unhook your mind from hers. You let her go. Or I'll release Akreen from that suppressor field, and he will not be in any mood for negotiation, I promise you.
The eyes trembled, the face muscles twitched, and the raging hate in that glare never changed.
Take the deal! Pike shouted. Use one of those slaves for a host. I don't care. Just release her.
And that was when Renzik 1.0's power cells failed, and Extra-Hulled was free of the stasis field. The drone was knocked to the floor, where it flipped over and lay still and most definitely lifeless. For an instant, Pike saw the hate in Dervla's eyes, the gun lord's hate, turn into raw, unreasoning terror. But was it a trick? An instant later, Extra-Hulled's arm came up and roughly shoved him away, but he had sufficient presence of mind to grab the field suppression device and rip it out of Akreen's chest. The first blade of the Zavri convulsed once, then came to life, roaring just one word.
Nya!
Everything came to her through the lens of Extra-Hulled's view of the world. It was his emotive responses which drove her body's autonomic responses. Anger, hate, self-satisfaction. So when he fooled and defeated first the Zavri leader, then Pike and some other woman, the smug, self-admiring, triumphalist self-congratulation was like a fetid cloud swirling around every thought, bathing it in vanity and pride. Dervla then had to attenuate her connections to the flow of the gunlord's thoughts, not so much to avoid those noxious conceits as to keep him from sensing the intensity of her repugnance. And then, with all three intruders helpless at his feet, He turned to his displays and control panels. He monologued loathsomely about his genocidal plans while studying the situation on a range of other planets and noting that a substantial number of Shuskar evacuees had now arrived at the Citadel world. Then, out of nowhere, the assault of the drone. Dervla's emotions leapt, and she felt Exra Hull's corrosive hate for her spike as a consequence. Then she realized that the attacking machine had adapted its force fields to exert a short-term partial stasis effect. Dervla had the impression that this was part of some kind of plan, but had nothing else to go on. Exra Huld had fallen to his knees near his victims. And then Pike began dragging the motionless body of the Zavri round and towards her own semi-paralyzed form, and she knew something was afoot. But when he started trying to strike a deal with the gunlord, she was aghast.
No! No! She wanted to say. Don't fall into that trap. Release the Zavri and destroy that abomination. Doesn't matter if I have to die.
She felt Exra Huld's vain hatred like thrusting pulses of acid. Felt his vicious anger towards Pike, felt his contempt for the suggestion of using one of the thralls as a host, and she sensed the first flickers in the drone's stasis field, sure signs that its cells were just about ready to shut down. It's now or never, she realized, summoning all her stored-up recollections of fear and terror while digging into Exra Hull's own memories for the deeply buried but potent echoes of his own raw, primal terrors. She fused it all together, then struck open all the connections and avenues which kept her thought domain shielded from that abominable presence. And as the stasis field finally failed and the dead drone was struck aside, she thrust the mirror of terrors into the gun lord's unsuspecting, unprepared mind. Shrieking panic erupted. A flailing hand struck Pike, who fell back, and in so doing, tore the locking device away from the Zavri's chest. Akreen convulsed, then sat bolt upright, roaring one word.
Nia!
Then, with blurring speed, he reached for the gunlord, one hand on the blunt weapon arm, the other wrapped around the neck. The tall, silver warrior then stood, forcing Exra Huld onto his feet, and spoke again.
Come out, worm! Come for me if you dare! Subdue me if you can, or die now at my hands! Choose!
Exra Huld's terror was real, but his self-centered vanity and arrogance would not let him refuse a challenge from such an adversary. But how would a bout between these two pan out, and why would Akreen take a chance like this? Then, to Dervla's amazement, Exra Hull's thought presence began to drain away, like a poisonous swamp being pumped clear. She began to feel the giddiness of real hope, the joy of a possible escape from evil darkness. Then, a pain stabbed in the side of her head, an awful hot pain that started to tear at her, tearing at her flesh, burning her flesh in a coiling track around her neck. A torment so nerve-shredding that she ceased to be completely aware of what was happening. Pike was dumbfounded when Akreen abruptly sat up, roared, "Nia!" and grabbed Dervla by the neck and that swollen arm. He was all ready to defy the pain rasping in his limbs and throw himself forward when the Zavri spoke further, issuing an astounding challenge to the gunlord Exra Huld. The pair were frozen for several moments in a tableau of brutal struggle, like some marble statue from humanity's ancient, distant past. Pike was light-headed and nauseous from the agonizing spikes twisting in his joints, spine and chest. But he forced himself to remain sitting upright, waiting for whatever was about to happen. It was a cry of pain so terrible, it sounded as if it were being torn from Dervla's throat. A kind of mad, panicking fear took hold, and he struggled to get back on his feet. But then she looked right at him, eyes wide and anguished, shaking her head as she held out her unmarred hand to stop him. Then, Her eyes rolled back to show the whites, and she let out another wrenching scream as the biomech parasite's spine tail began to unwind itself from her body. The track of horrifying bloody pinpricks that coiled from the head around the neck and over the upper back and one shoulder blade was bad enough, but the deep gouges left along her arm was the worst. As the vile entity freed itself from its human host, Akreen released Derva so that he could grasp the weapon barrel head with both hands. Pike kept expecting the Incarnalith shards to start bursting forth, but instead, Akreen suddenly staggered back, swayed for a moment, then fell to one knee. The parasite's long, dark tail spine whipped up and coiled itself around the Zavri's neck.
"Fight, Akreen!"
Pike yelled, now crawling towards the Zavri despite the pain.
"Fight the bastard!"
But it seemed too late. The biomech squirmed in Akreen's loosened grasp, fitting itself into position along one arm while the other fell listlessly to the Zavri's side. Pike was overcome by a wave of despair, even as he saw Lieutenant Brock dragging herself towards the scene of the action. Akreen's face was slack, his eyes vacant and lifeless, but only for a moment. A gleeful, triumphant expression crept into the silver features, and Exra Hull's familiar hatred animated the eyes. Pike was a stranger to the kind of bleak despair that now assailed him. But stubbornness for Pike wasn't something to be picked from a range of options, but an intrinsic quality carved into his being. He wouldn't lie down and die. If he had to fight a possessed Zavri bare-fisted, then he would. Fighting against the hot pain gouging through his limbs, he somehow got himself up into a kneeling position. Meanwhile, Brock, her face twisted by pain, was on her stomach, stretching out towards a hand beamer, which lay several feet away. Exra Hald was exulting in his capture and domination of a new host, reveling in his jubilation.
"I dared! I subdued! I win! I... what is... why?"
Pike was reaching for a nearby stool to use as a weapon when he heard the note of confusion in the gunlord's voice. When he looked round, it seemed that Exra Huld was unable to move his new legs. As Pike watched, a dark, web-like tracery began spreading from the feet up and from the fingertips along the arms. The confusion in those silvery features was overtaken by a slow, horrified realization. Pike could see segments of that waxy grey spine tail start to writhe, as if trying to detach itself, but something was now holding on to it, binding it, entrapping it. Exra Huld let out a rasping screech. It used the unchanged hand to try and tear the spine tail from neck and arm, but with the passing seconds, every motion was growing jerky and slow, and at last the limbs and the head were still motionless. The dark web had spread right across the Zavri's form, looking like a network of cracks, and Pike had a disturbing premonition about what was about to happen. Then, unexpectedly, the Zavri's head turned to look at Pike, and the skin at the neck splintered, raining fragments on the floor.
"Vengeance is hot, Captain Pike!"
The First Blade's voice was muted and hoarse.
"But it is final!"
Then, that tall, broad-shouldered figure began to disintegrate. The unaltered arm cracked and crumbled, falling away at the shoulder. Gaps appeared in the face and neck and worked their way in and down. The body of the biomech parasite was still writhing, but a dark glassiness took hold in patches along its length and ate into it. And when it squirmed, the glassy areas cracked and burst, tiny splinters flying everywhere. Pike thought he felt a few land on his hands. Eventually, the biomech split open all the way to the heavy, blunt barrel head, which also started to crumble. At the same time, Akreen's torso gave way and the disintegrating carcass crashed to the floor, where it continued to break down into grit and powder. Suddenly, Pike realized that the grinding pain in his limbs and joints had faded to a dull ache. He put his hand up to his head and felt gingerly around the wound where the cytoblast dart had struck. His fingers encountered gritty grains and tiny slivers that looked as dark and glassy as the remains of the biomech parasite, which had called itself Exra Hulled.
"I've got the same," said Brock, who had levered herself into a seated position against one of the control panel supports further along. "Pain's gone. Are we okay because it's dead?"
Pike squeezed his eyes shut tight, then opened them again.
"Well, no. Since it's dead, and we're not, I'm taking that as a good sign."
"Pike." Whispery and weak, the voice came from the red-garbed figure curled up next to the main control board. On hand and knees, Pike crawled over, feeling a weak relief that she was still alive.
"Dervla, don't move. You've got to save your strength."
"Is it gone? Please, is it gone?"
She raised a trembling hand to the side of her head, winced, then looked at her blood-slick fingertips.
"Pike, is it?"
"It's dead and gone, Dolly. Smashed to pieces. Won't hurt anyone ever again."
Dervla swallowed, nodded tiredly, and rested her head against the side of the control board. "Need to find some bandages," Pike thought, as he managed to get up onto his feet and, despite the shakiness in his legs, went over to help Brock to stand as well.
"How is she doing?"
the lieutenant said.
"Well, now, going on my extensive experience as a medical professional, I'd say we're in the clear."
"Ah, good. The wisecracking routine. Thought you were losing your touch. Hey, what's she doing?"
Dervla, who he'd thought had gone back to semi-consciousness, had somehow dragged herself up onto her feet. Without looking at Pike or Brock, she leaned over the control board, sobbing as she did so, and began punching in commands, flipping switches, a swift process ending in a final button push. Then she sank down to sit on the floor, still weeping, as she covered her face with her one good hand.
"Dear God, Dervla."
Pike had hurried over, but not quickly enough to stop her.
"What did you do?"
He stared up at the massive array of screens, trying to get a clue.
"They deserved it," Dervla said, voice shaking. "All of them." "Who?"
Then he saw it. A video feed from the Citadel world, an exterior shot of the long, wide dockside canyon. The sparkly, shimmering containment that sealed it at the surface, and the tapering outline of that big tower. All very serene against the cratered distance of the planetoid and the curve of its horizon, and the glittering array of the war cage set against the starry expanse of interstellar space. Then there was a brightening on one side of the frame, and sharp shadows started being cast by boulders, shadows that grew and moved. There was an engulfing brilliance, then nothing. The video feed was dead.
"He was sending the Shuskar evacuees there," Dervla said. "They had to die. Deserved to die. Needed to die. Served those filthy things for centuries, for millennia, killed and tortured for them, generation after generation."
"But there were others up there,"
Pike cried out, angry and disbelieving.
"Mav and the Malzanori."
"Pike," said Brock, "I think we should hear what the Renziks have to say." A small triangular object came flying towards him, carrying beneath it a larger companion, the tiny drone that had put down those pale thralls earlier. They stopped a couple of feet away, hovering at head height.
"Hello again, Captain."
"Ah, it's yourself. Renzik 2.0, is that right?"
"Correct. And my transporter is Renzik 3.0. I need to reassure you that the Chainer leader, Gabrosan Mav, and his followers, and the Malgenori rebels,
did not perish in the Corona mass strike.
That's all. How?
My skilled scion, Renzik 3.0, was working on restarting the Shadow Bastion Hubgate system to provide an escape route in the event of unforeseen difficulties. A Mal'Janori technician used the directions left behind to do exactly that. So, when the Corona mass obliterated the Citadel and the Dockside Canyon and the Shuskar escapees, Gabros and Mav and the rest had already departed. They are safe and awaiting you on Nagolga.
What about my crew? He ordered his thoughts. Two lifeboats ejected from a failing Shuskar ship a short time ago. I thought they might have automatically headed for the Citadel world. Any news about them?
For a moment, no reply. Then, Renzik 2.0 spoke. My scion says that he has been filtering data from the Earth Sphere fleet security frequencies, which the Sun Heart receptors inadvertently picked up. And he says there was a report that two such life pods were retrieved by the cruiser ES Abilene. He has no other data as to their well-being or whereabouts.
Ah, the Earth Sphere ships, he thought. I forgot about them.
Okay, Dervla, sweetheart. Looks like you didn't go full crazy after all.
Brock waved at him to shut up. She's going in a shack.
Damn, we need some medical supplies.
There is a full medical station on the other side of this auditorium, said Renzik 2.0. Shall we fly over and bring back what we can?
Yes, immediately. Pike, help me bandage her wounds. It could be the blood loss.
They did all they could to make Dervla comfortable while staunching bleeding from the head and arm wounds. By the time the drones had returned with a parcel of stims, painkillers and trauma kits, some colour had come back to Dervla's face. She looked up at Pike, eyes shadowed in weariness.
Some wild adventure it's been, eh?
She said.
It has that. And I've learned a hard lesson from all this, I can tell you. Which is?
Don't try this at home, folks.
She started to laugh, then winced.
Brandon Pike, I swear if I had a bit of strength in just one of me arms.